Hello there, I'm Tim and he's John, and this is How to Murder Time, a podcast about games and things.
Hello everybody.
Watcher.
Back in the studio.
Yeah.
Birds are tweeting.
Tweety, tweety, tweet.
Yeah, somebody needs to invent silent air conditioning. Yes, it's another week. More games being played, but this week we're going to be talking about, well, it's this general theme of upgrades and expansions to games.
It's a board games one.
It's definitely a board gamey one, although two of them are actually not board games.
Okay.
Only one of them is a board game. We're going to talk about a couple of war games and a board game which have had new versions or expansions released recently.
Okay, doggy.
And we're going to start with Ticket to Ride, because I got a new copy of Ticket to Ride.
Wow, is that a special edition or what?
Yes, a 10th year special edition. That is a luxurious box.
It is. It's an object of high quality.
The board, it's the American one. The board is 150% larger than the normal one.
It's huge. It just about fit on the table. We took it around to Zozo there. You'll have heard us doing our What We're Playing thing, but the same day we had to go with the Ticket to Ride as well.
Yeah, and it has little tins in there with each of the different train types, with really nice little plastic models for the trains.
Yes and no. I don't know. I mean, I like, well, because the original Ticket to Ride, the bog standard thing, it's just monocolour moulded plastic train carriages, and they're all the same type. They're all the same shape, except and just different colours to show whose team it is. Basically, play Ticket Ride, you lay out little trains along train tracks around routes around the landmass. But this special edition one had little engraved, quite highly painted tins with all sorts of stylish looking stuff on them, and the individual trains were quite well detailed.
And some of them parts multiple of plastic parts.
Yeah,
so it all comes pre-assembled, which is quite amazing.
Yeah, that's good. That would have been a real pain because you get about 100 trains each or something.
Yeah,
120 something like that. Each team has a slightly different look and style to their train carriages as well. There's like a sort of metropolitan box car thing for the blue team. I think the circus train was good. I think it's the red team one. They have tiny little giraffe heads sticking out the back of the carriages.
That is one giraffe heavy circus.
I think you're going to get a bit bored of the acts three or four in. Yeah.
Let me guess, is it a giraffe?
I was the yellow team, and I had, oddly enough, brown carriages, which were like giant barrel casks, which are quite good-looking things.
I was the black one who has the coal hopper.
It was all sort of coal freight stuff, yeah. Quite distinctive, quite interesting.
It's really quite nice, and it does look a lot more attractive than the normal one.
Yeah, yeah. The rest of the gubbins is largely the same. The score markers, cards, and so on. This is the first time I played the original vanilla
the
Ticket to Ride,
one,
which is the American.
Well, it's
one,
the American one with 2010, the expansion. Not 1910, sorry. 2010 would be completely different. Added more cities,
monorails, and bullet trains and things. Hmm. So I mean,
so it does open the question:
has the American version the first?
Yeah,
the original. Yeah, because we usually play with a copy that friends have, which
is the
European map, and there are some extra rules on the European map, and the European map itself seems a lot more complicated and twisty and awkward than the map
we saw with
the US one. It does
open the question: is the classic one better than the revised European one?
I think there's a certain purity of experience there. It's much simpler and much easier to get your head around what you're trying to do, because basically the point of Ticket to Ride is to earn points by making routes that are on cards you draw at the start. So, you know, and then you basically take turns to pick up carriage cards, which you then spend in suits, you know, three, four, five pink ones to make a line along one particular route, and you connect these routes together to make the overall journey, and it did seem a lot, because normally I have a fair bit of trouble getting all of my initial cards done, because, you know, there's problems, there's blocking, and I can't quite work out where to go and which route to take and so on, whereas the American map, it seemed a lot more of a grid format. There was usually a lot more double routes, which means that it was a lot less likely to be blocked out by other players. It seemed, I don't know, I don't want to use the word easy to make it sound condescending or something, but it was a much
simpler.
More simpler and streamlined sort of play to the American route map. The European one seems to have problems. The European one has extra rules as well, bridges and tunnels.
Yeah, tunnels where you have to sort of gamble your way through them.
Yeah, yeah. So the European map, you know, say if you're going around a lot of the Alpine routes around Switzerland or whatever, a lot of the routes have these black outlines, and that basically means that you have to flip a number of cards each for each space along that route, and if any of them come up locomotive, you have to spend one extra carriage to put the route down, and that adds complications. The idea of bridges, I don't think, is in the US one either. That means basically you need at least one locomotive or two locomotives as well as the carriages to be able to go across that route, and that didn't seem to come up at all. The American map just seems to have straightforward single colour routes with no real trickery, or just grey routes, which you can use any matching set of colours along. Much easier to get stuff done, I suppose. But then the European map sort of, there's a sort of twist, a sort of tweaked acknowledgement of the complexity of it all with the stations. They didn't seem to appear in the
No, there's no stations in the original.
In the European one, you have three station counters, which allow you to sort of piggyback other people's routes to finish your own routes, and you gain extra points if you don't have to use them. I don't know. I think, to be honest, I prefer the American one because there's less going on, and I do consider myself a bit of a beginner player still. I mean, we've played it a fair bit, but I don't practice, and I haven't really, you know, I don't go away thinking about it lots. So generally find the American route map and the simplified rules that come with the basic game a lot easier to get my head
around. It does feel a bit purer.
I still lost.
Yeah.
Did I came last? I think I must have come last.
No, I came last in the end.
Okay.
Because I got locked out of LA.
Ah, well, I did manage to get all my routes in, which was encouraging, particularly since, yeah, no station counters to be able to use, correct mistakes with at the end, you know? So it's more pressure there, but it's the basic task's simpler.
Yeah. It's a very, very lavish production. And
the 10-year special edition one, yeah.
And nice. I do have this thing about really liking the specialist. I've got the wooden Settlers of Catan, which is really nice.
I suppose a lot of it, yes, there's a certain opulence to it, but it's a question of durability as well.
Yeah.
If they've spent a bit more on the production of it, it's going to last longer, it's going to survive more wear and tear.
Yeah, I only do that with the games I know are going to get played a lot.
Yeah.
And that and Catan.
So basic editions are typically mass-produced and done to as little cost as possible, so you end up with quite cheap bits and pieces, the boards aren't as thick as they could be, the cards fray and go ragged at the edges and so on. I like the little tins to keep all your pieces in, that's a nice touch. And yeah, the little train carriages there, you got a picture of it there, looking on the Days of Wonder website there, and yeah, you can see them all.
They're really cute. Yes. Yeah, I think it's worthwhile. It's a little bit pricey.
So I'm not sure the 10-year anniversary specifically brings anything new on its own.
I mean, it just brings production quality.
The newness for me was that I'd never played on the basic American map before, and I think, to be honest, find it preferable to the European one, which is a pain in the arse. Are there other regional ticket to rides, like China or
Australia? Oh, you can buy loads and loads
Australia
and loads of
or
maps.
Whatever.
There's India, Africa.
Oh, yeah.
There's a Halloween one.
Halloween.
Asia.
Mm-hmm.
Alvin and Dexter, which sounds weird.
Alvin and Dexter's the little flying saucer in the UFO.
Oh, yeah.
The dinosaur thing.
Yeah, we don't talk about that, do we?
There's some weird variant rules you can add to it, yeah.
Europa 2012, which is an expansion of cards.
So, they Mystery Tour and 19 whatever that we had as part of the 10-year anniversary one. They're basically just a new set of routes to try and do, isn't
it? Basically, yeah.
Mm. Okay.
Although there are bits and bobs which
some
also
Nordic did. Countries there as well.
Yeah, there's quite a few.
Scandinavia.
The only problem, of course, is
I think each map definitely lends a new character to the game.
It does.
I think if you're a huge fan of this game, you might want to stock up on more than one of the sets because each board is going to be a different sort
of
challenge.
The only problem with the 10th anniversary is it's not compatible with the others.
Because the trains are different sizes and stuff? Yeah,
the trains are bigger.
The boards
scale. And so I'd
up.
Like to see the other boards released in that quality. You just get the board and the cards, but you use the trains from the 10th anniversary. That would be nice.
That'd be a nice
but
feature,
but that's
yeah.
not going to happen.
No, fair enough. So,
yeah.
10 years old, though. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm very happy with that purchase. It's one of those things which is going to last a long time and is a very fun game.
Excellent.
So, next game has had a little expansion-y thing. We had a go at X-Wing with the Tantive IV expansion.
Yeah. Well, I just saw...
You enjoyed yourself.
I was so appalled by the excess, which is the Tantive IV or whatever that you went and bought. I thought, well, God, all right, well, we better play it. Because nothing makes me more cross than spending ridiculous amounts of money on stupid toys is then not playing with them.
I mainly bought it as a display piece.
It's a really nice model, I have to say.
Everyone who isn't aware... is anyone not aware? Anyone who doesn't know about the Tantive IV, it's the ship that's attacked by the Star Destroyer at the start of A New Hope, Star Wars. And
Corellian Corvette.
Yes. The model of it in this game You know, usually the models of the X-Wings are everything about an inch and a half long.
Yeah, about that.
This is a foot long.
Yeah, we measured it, didn't
yeah,
we?
Yeah, it is a foot.
12 inches long, yeah. It's ridiculous.
And you do have to ask sometimes, how big is too big?
Yeah, yeah.
And
actually looking at it, I'm wondering if that is even to scale anyway compared to an
X-Wing.
Not.
No,
yeah. It should probably be more like 5 or 6 foot long compared
yeah,
to
it
the
should be
1-inch X-Wings.
And don't even get started on how big the
Star Destroyer is. Yeah.
Now,
but it's a vast model in a ridiculous thing, to be honest.
it very much is, but it does look beautiful. Mm. It has its own set of rules. Now, the nice thing about the way X-Wing works is every single ship you get gets all the rules needed for that ship in there and all the cards needed. So when this comes along, you get the rules for the large super capital, the lowest capital ships, the different play styles, and also the rules for dealing with the ship, which is basically it's so big it's got a rear and a front section.
That was interesting. Yeah, the rules effectively treat it as two ships that always move in the same direction.
Yeah,
at
two
the same
ships
time.
Sort of stuck together using a brand new movement card.
Yeah,
which a template that makes it move, which is very
yeah,
interesting.
Yeah,
it's not the most manoeuvrable ship ever.
No, especially once we part a few asteroids on during that scenario there.
Yeah, you can go through the asteroids though.
Hmm.
I have
barge
to
barge them out of the way.
I have to say, a random thing. That turn of the game where you randomly hit two TIE fighters into asteroids in one turn was fantastic.
That's me. That's why I don't really get on with this game a lot.
Now,
it's not that I don't like it, it's that I'm really, really bad at it.
You did quite well.
Okay, so yeah, basically, so the thing comes with a little booklet with some special missions to use this giant monstrosity in. And we
it's got a branching campaign.
Yeah, and a little four mission campaign with a branch in the middle there. That seemed quite interesting.
It branches after the first one, and then yeah.
Yeah, so we ended up. You had the big ship.
I did. Yes.
I figured you better let you play your prize new acquisition. I ended up with what six TIE fighters. Six TIE fighters with pretty basic gear.
Yeah.
No special hero TIE fighter pilots, as if that's a concept. And so the idea was basically I had to destroy it and you had to, what, get clear? I can't remember. Or
I had to survive a certain amount of time, which we completely failed to count turns.
Oh, I forgot.
Every time.
Lost track of that. Brilliant. So, yeah, standard X-Wing miniatures game sort of play. You take turns to issue orders using your little turny wheels and then hide them. And then you reveal the wheels and everyone does all their manoeuvres using measuring things. And then you find that all your ships are crashed into each other and you leave in a huff. I got much better at that this time, I think.
Yes,
I
think you didn't get hung up on the whole crashing into stuff and managed to mainly keep stuff in
the air.
I
don't think I ever hit one of my own ships with another of my own ships, which is brilliant. I think I might have crashed into you once or twice.
To be fair, it was hard to avoid crashing into me. It's a big ship.
It's enormous, yeah, yeah. Because basically, if you end your move with your bases overlapping, then you effectively have crashed into them. You can pass through ships without any penalty because three-dimensional space and so on, but if you end up inside... Mind you, that worked to my advantage in some regards because I ended up parking my TIE fighters in such positions that each time you turned, you swung the back end of your ship into one of my stationary and innocent Sunday-driving TIE fighters.
It was impossible for me to move at one point.
And then that had sort of various implications on what you could then do. You had to stop where you were and
I wasn't getting
you
actions.
Do.
I couldn't shoot the various people.
So that turned out to be an accidental discovery on my part, is that you can grief this ship quite comfortably by parking very small fighters near the rear end of it and then just watching as he tries to turn. Because he doesn't turn... It turns on a specific point, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Which then swings the back end round. It's
yeah,
the centre of turning
near
the front.
You've got a weird turning thing, which you basically has got notches on, and then you rotate it and move it along, and it's weird.
Yeah, yeah. So you ended up basically, most sort of every other turn towards the end, you were just swinging the back end into one of my spaceships.
Yeah, the back end swings out, which is really awkward.
Yeah, very tricky manoeuvring, especially when you've got lots of little things all clumped up around you.
Like a swarm of TIE fighters.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I still didn't win, though. The problem, I don't know, I was whittling away.
Yeah.
The problem I had is because this bloody great spaceship has special rules about a reactor, which generates power points, which you then spend all over the place. You can put the shields up, or you can
use fire guns,
user abilities, or whatever. And I had you on the defensive pretty early on, but your defense was really, really good. And I found that I just couldn't make any significant headway at all on on this capital ship with essentially what amounts to six dogfighting TIE fighters.
You could have done it if you'd concentrated on the rear section, which has less shields.
I didn't even know that at the time, but yeah, that became apparent during, but then I thought, well, I've made a start on the front, I should probably keep going, which I suppose was a mistake.
If you'd gone after the rear, you would have won quite happily.
I don't know. I just think it's stupid sending six attack fighters to deal with a capital ship. You send a bomber. You send something with torpedoes.
Yeah.
You
know. Something with torpedoes would have been a bit more interesting. Yeah,
if I don't know if you've got TIE bombers. We should probably try that one time.
What do you mean you don't know if I've got TIE
bombers? I can't see. There's spaceships everywhere in here.
I have TIE bombers.
Okay, you got TIE bombers. Good. So why didn't you give me those? The correct tool for dealing with the capital ship?
The mission said you had to use TIE fighters.
Yes. I think probably that mission was rigged to make the recent purchaser of a large capital ship happy that they'd made their choice correctly.
You are such a cynic.
We don't want it trounced on the first mission, first time out. I imagine later missions in that little campaign track probably would have introduced something with a bit more oomph.
Later missions, you have to actually start doing shipbuilding as well, so you get 70 points to use to boost up your forces.
I'd have gone straight with the bombers. It's the right tool for the job.
Yeah, quite possibly.
Torpedoes all over the place.
Actually, torpedoes would probably do it quite well.
Even
just shoving a bomb.
How are you doing dealing with me? I mean, I don't remember a lot of my ships vanishing. I was dodging a lot.
It was quite hard because...
I had you on the ropes with the defensive point spending, so you couldn't keep using all the big guns. Also, some of your guns have quite long minimum range.
Yeah, there was a minimum range.
Special ruler, wasn't there?
Yeah, a special ruler which you have to clip together to make it longer. you got him within my big guns. And so
I've played X-Wing before. That's the standard operating procedure when you've been given a TIE fighter to deal with a Corvette. I mean, actually, in X-Wing, the way to deal with it was getting behind the engines where there was no gunning arc.
Yeah, that's why they added engine wash in the next one.
Yes, I remember that. I think was it X-Wing or X-Wing versus TIE Fighter? If you got too close to the engines behind one, it's just started to rumble and start burning your ship up. But yeah, so getting in close is a good way to deal with it, but then I just didn't have enough oomph to get the job done, I felt.
Yeah, I think...
And I think I had you spending so many reactor points on shield repairs that you didn't really get much of your gunnery up and running either. So I think you won, but it was a bit stalematey, wasn't it?
It was very stalematey. It'd be interesting to see
much
it.
Either way.
You can't use these in normal play. They're cinematic and epic play, which are two different modes, introduce these. Because, you know, you're not going to spend... It's 100 points. All of a normal force.
Well, a balanced force was essentially six TIE fighters versus this, so, yeah.
And so you have to decide with your opponent that you're going to play a game which involves these capital ships.
Yeah, I mean, you could quite happily use it as some scenery or whatever.
Oh, it's got rules for scenery as well. Yeah. And in fact, if you turn over the card base, it's got the scenery base.
Okay.
So you can use it in anything. It's quite nice.
So it might make an attractive thing to look at whilst you're dogfighting across the other side of the map.
Yeah.
But
I think it adds something really interesting to the game.
It was a lot more interesting than the usual, you know, TIE fighters versus X-Wings.
The game
that we tend
does have a bit of a problem, which is it's running out of ships quite badly, which can be seen by the fact that the next wave of ships is adding a ship from Star Wars Galaxies.
That's right, I saw you tweeting about that. Yeah, so there's two new ships. One of them is, I think, from that Shadows of the Empire.
Yeah, it's Dash Rendar's
YT something or other.
Corvette. The Outrunner. Outrigger
Corvette.
Yeah, which actually is in A New Hope, because it got retrofitted into the Mos Eisley series.
But the Imperial counterpart to that is actually the multi-crew ship at the top end of the Imperial pilot line from Star Wars Galaxies, which they're just grabbing stuff from everywhere. The Ebon Hawk's in there, which of course is Kyle Katarn's spaceship, well, Jan Orr's spaceship from Jedi Knight and Dark Forces.
TIE Defender's in there now.
TIE Defender's, it's like they just don't care about canon. They're going all out with the EU expanded universe thing.
Yeah,
I'm looking forward to the missile boat.
I don't think the missile boat's ever going
to
show
up. The missile boat
up.
Was the solution to the problem that the TIE Defender caused by being massively overpowered. The missile boat, I think it had like 40 concussion missiles, and you just used them like a blaster.
Yeah.
And it had something called, I think it was a slam drive or something. It was like an in-system hyperspace in-battle thing. You just like whoosh, gone, mega afterburner. It was crazy.
Yeah, it's interesting to see what ships are going to come up with.
Think they're just running out of stuff, running out of ideas? I expect we'll see all the, I don't know, we'll start seeing Knights of the Old Republic stuff showing up as well.
Is there anything
The Old Republic? The Old Republic certainly got four eight to choose from, I think. Each of the primary class archetypes on both sides gets their own personal spaceship they go off on their missions with after level 20. So there's potentially eight new iconic spaceships that could be used there.
And also don't forget that next year there's going to be a new film coming out.
Well, yeah.
Which we already know that has either an upgraded X-Wing or... the replacement for the X-Wing, because we've seen the model.
It's like they've... I don't know how aware of the merch they all were when they were making a new...
I think that when you... Well, you say that. I don't know. Nobody was very aware apart from...
Did they even know that A New Hope was going to be even remotely successful?
No, the only person who had any clue about merchandising was... Alec Guinness and Lucas.
Yeah.
Because Lucas managed to make the deal where he controlled the merchandising, and Alec Guinness said, yeah, I'll do this for next to nothing. I want a cut of that merch.
I want a cut.
And everyone said, yeah, that's fine. It's not going to make anything. Yeah. Then all of a sudden, it invented film merchandising.
Mm, but certainly Phantom Menace and beyond, it's been all been about, you know, you design...
Well, Empire
you design,
onwards, basically.
Really? Yeah. You design the toys in from script writing. So presumably these next three films are going to be full of things for kids to buy.
Yeah, you can just see the meetings where it's, we're going to need another fighter because we need to switch against that.
Yeah, we need to. So much game balance ideas going into script design. So I suppose they're not going to run out of ships to... I don't think there's a real problem here. I think there's plenty of really obscure stuff to plunder for this.
And they haven't touched the prequel trilogy, and they said they aren't going to, which is a bit weird. There are some nice ships in the prequel stuff. If you take away... The rubbishness
of the films.
I'd
like a really good Naboo, you know, Amidala's... No, well, not so much the Amidala's silvery one.
Oh, yeah, the silvery one, that'd be cool.
And the one they sharpen at the beginning of the Attack of the Clones, it's like quite a long wing thing. It's almost like a B-52 bomber in silver, you know, with the big turbines.
And also
on.
the Jedi's have some nice fighters with the little wings that come out.
Yeah,
some interesting stuff. That you
so, yeah, that, I just don't think there's going to be any problem coming up with new stuff you to buy for this.
It's not like the Star Trek game, which has six new ships every 2-3 months.
Yeah, I think Star Trek's more or less a spent force, to be honest. But
they're currently heading those Voyager stuff, which demonstrates the example that...
And it's ironic, because I think I preferred the Star Trek game to the basic X-Wing game, but this was this was better. I mean, I'm not sure I'm still... entirely sold or a fan of this game yet, but I think the variety introduced by having one big ship versus lots of little ships, you know, that sort of dynamic, it was an interesting departure from the usual lots of little ships versus lots of little ships and Tim not really knowing what the hell's going on at all and crashing into stuff a lot, you know. I don't know, because I like the Star Trek thing because that's one big ship versus another big ship. I mean, if you had two of these Tanti 4s fighting each other, how would that work? Would that be a satisfying game?
I don't think so.
Because essentially, if everything is the same size, it doesn't matter what scale you're on anymore.
Yeah, I think it'd just be too annoying and they're too slow to get away from each other.
You just ram each other. I'd get bored and just ram you with it and see who
won.
Then
I would win because...
Well, I'd win because the game would be over. Hooray!
Yeah,
I win.
Everyone wins.
I don't have to play anymore. I don't know. I think it was more interesting, but I don't know.
Well, you've already got the large ships, which we haven't played a lot with, which... These are the extra large ships. You've got the large ships, which is stuff
you've got a Millennium Falcon.
Millennium Falcon, a Slave One.
Yeah, Boba Fett's
and
thing
also
somewhere.
The Imperial Shuttle.
I don't think we've played with that. We should have to give that a go, I suppose, yeah.
We played with the Falcon once.
I don't remember. Maybe it was so traumatic I can't remember.
Yeah, I think the problem is TIE swarms are a bit evil, and we need to stay away from TIE swarms.
Yeah, just get fed up with like moving my 8th TIE fighter forward and left a bit and have it crash into 7, 9 and 4, you know.
Well, when my
I'm not really suited for micromanaged fleet command.
When
my
TIE defenders turn up, then I think we'll have an interesting...
I really want to go at a TIE defender.
Yeah,
probably only need one.
Two to be
TIE Defender beats everything.
TIE Defender's the best.
I swear there were missions in TIE Fighter where you used a TIE Defender to take out quite small but significant Star Destroyers.
Well, Star Destroyers are easy to take out.
Yeah, you just keep blowing up the water towers until it crashes into another Star Destroyer.
Why did they design the Star Destroyer to have such a stupid design for?
Let's put the Achilles heel out on the top, on a big dome.
I guess you could say that the generators have to be up there, but maybe a bit more armour around them?
Why do they have to be up there? It's not like space can cool them, because there's no conduction or convection. You don't need cooling fins on a spaceship.
Maybe they need the extra heat provided by the lasers hitting them.
Fair enough. I give up.
Yeah, that's a bad thing.
Let's talk about another thing.
Okay, right. The last game that we played is 7th edition of Warhammer 40K came out.
Yes, the granddaddy. They trotted out another go at it. 7th edition. My God, I remember learning 5th last time we played, so I really don't remember. Did we miss 6th?
No, we played 6th. We played 6th.
What was the difference between 5 and 6?
Combat went away.
Oh, that was the Snapfire thing.
Yeah, Snapfire came in and things like that. And suddenly, and flyers.
And suddenly orcs were brilliant.
Yeah.
Orcs became a shooty army.
Yeah. Actually, if you look behind you, on the shelf are 3 books. Just above your head.
Oh, God.
One says are called something of war. There's the rules.
Is it the one with the skulls on it?
Yes. Pull the 3 books that look the same with the skulls on it.
No. They're all look the same.
The grey one and the 2 next to it.
Okay, there we go. God, there's one there called The Rules.
Yes, that's the important one. Now, what they've done is...
Oh, that's rather lavish.
Yes, the clever thing they've done here is they've split the book, which would have been the width of all 3 of them together.
Yeah, there's one here called Dark Millennium, and there's one here called A Galaxy of War.
So what they've done is...
Oh, they've moved all the fluff out into its own book.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a good idea, actually.
Because carryable. The other one was big enough to kill someone.
I do have a soft spot for the grim darkness of the 41st millennium and everything, but not while I'm trying to find out what I need to roll to do what to play this and that and the other. I don't want to have to wade through 3 chapters of what a badass Horus was before I can find out where my to-hit roll table is. So they pulled all that out into 3 books now. So what have we got there?
So we've got the rule book.
The rules, yeah.
Which is a nice, heavily
pages.
That's
still a weighty tome, isn't it? He's holding an A4 really hard, very hard back
very
bound book. Which, how many pages?
210.
And that's with all the extraneous fluff pulled out and put into separate volumes still. So, wow. Why is that neat? Why do you need 300 pages to teach someone how to play this game?
That is a good question.
Because this is what's always put me off in the past to this game. It's just such high maintenance.
Because you've got to have large pictures of models.
Yeah, I think they should have a 4th tome, which is all the obvious scenery porn that they're using to sell miniatures.
No, you haven't asked what the 3rd book is.
Yeah.
The 3rd book is that.
Oh, bloody hell. So near and yet so far.
Yeah. The 3rd book.
The Galaxy of War, then, is essentially another really weighty hardback tome of about... I don't know, 200 pages.
The same is the WAT 210.
Is literally page after page after page of full page glossy. Look at that. It's like a centerfold spread there.
There is an awful lot of turning the book sideways.
People normally do that in comedies when they're looking at something they're not supposed to be looking at, and they do that face when they turn it sideways. This is like a
look at the riptide on that.
Wow, it's an A3. Oh, I'm rubbing my thighs here. You can't see this, but
there is a good use for
it's
that.
A towel battle suit.
That is the best picture of a riptide anywhere you can get.
It's a fantastic painting guide, I suppose.
It just shows you the detail on the models.
How to try painting these things, then this thing has just got page after page of almost everything of every force and some quite a lot of close-up stuff. It's really good. This is just a coffee table book, really. Isn't
it? That is definitely a coffee table.
A coffee table book in a living room that you don't invite girls in too much.
That's a sexist thing to say, you sexist pig.
I'm the sexist pig.
There are girls who play this
thing. Is that why they invented the Sisters of Battle? That was
a cynical sexist move on their part.
Fair enough. I'm going to stop talking about sexism and gender.
So you got that. You got the.
So what we got here? This one here is Dark Millenniums. And again, it's another about 150 pages of hardbound. This is just all backstory. This is all narrative and prose about the various races.
If 40K has got anything going for it, it is the backstory.
It's just had so much contribution over so long. It's had a couple of rewrites every now and then. Are orcs currently a fungus?
Yes,
they are. Yeah. Oh, they're gone with that, have they? Okay.
The new orc book's out on Saturday, so we're not 100% sure.
Right. We'll find out what orcs are in due course again. But yeah, I mean, I do like the 40K universe, and this is something I could probably leaf through and quite enjoy. It's just the rule book I think I'd probably have problems with. The other two tomes are quite nice.
To be fair, the rule book isn't as bad as it looks.
It does look bad. It looks weighty. You just look at that and think, oh, God, you know, it's that whole first time we play, almost nausea, you know, that weariness when up pops another rule book, and this one's huge.
This is huge, and it's better at getting you started, but still not as good as it could be.
Did we ever go with that one, or you had some other rule book?
I used the digital one.
You had the digital iPad-y thing.
Yes, because it's also available on the digital iPad one, which has a handy feature of being able to click on a thing, and it'll tell you the rule.
Yeah, fantastic. It explodes pop-out boxes and all that sort of thing. Little scrolling within boxes and stuff. It's quite good. Quite an interesting and useful format.
Yeah, now...
But I suppose you still need the basic big tome, do you?
No, you can play just with that. Okay. Only the paper ones are a lot easier to find stuff.
It's a nice artifact, certainly, if you collect these things.
What they've done with this rule book is it is perhaps... out of all of the war games I've ever played, the best laid out book out of all of them. Any other game. Because we had problems.
We've had some problems with some stinkers in the past. That Dropship Commander thing, that was all over the place. Pretty much anything by Fantasy Flight is a real struggle to get through the rules to learn how to play the basics.
Well, this starts off basically talking down to you, telling you the basics of everything, so there's no... ambiguity at all.
Yeah, yeah. So it looks like it's telling you what a model is on that page.
Yeah, it's stuff like cock dice.
What is a cock dice?
Yeah. Which is where a lot of fights come from.
Yeah, yeah.
The one that I like that people use is if you can balance another dice on top of it, then it's not cocked.
Okay.
But if it slides off, it's cocked.
Okay, that's
fair. Which is a nice one. But they didn't mention that.
I think cocked dice is generally solvable by having two reasonable opponents.
Yes.
Who are quite happy to just re-roll if it seems like there's a question.
I think you'll find that most problems in wargaming is solved by having two reasonable opponents. Which is why playing with your mate is a lot more fun than playing in a tournament.
Or just turning up at a club and hoping for the best with some strangers, yeah.
And this rulebook goes through and explains everything. There's a bunch of changes, like the line of sight on model eye view has changed to be a bit more easier.
There was some, so what we got in the way of basic changes to rules then? The thing I noticed the most, I think, was the objective system. That seems new and interesting.
We'll get to the objective in a second. The biggest change is the psychic phase, which we completely negated by you having no psychers and me playing an army with no psychers.
That's good. I like that. Any army selection based on minimal use of rules,
Although,
I could take one of these, but then I'd have to learn how they work.
I think the orcs are going to have to get a weird boy. What they've done is they've basically taken the magic phase from fantasy and put it into here.
Okay.
Because the problem before was people would go through and they keep forgetting to do their psychic stuff.
Yeah, the psychic stuff is sort of tacked on as it fits in around
everything. It can be done during firing or
Now there's a specific thing and there's some much more elaborate rules and expanded stats and so on.
That seems like a lot better. And
better abilities laid out more precisely and so on.
Yeah, which it seems like a good move, although I haven't played with
it. I think so. I mean, particularly if you're dealing with some of the more eldritch forces, thinking particularly Chaos or Dark Eldar, I imagine that sort of thing.
Well, even just Marines or something with librarians.
Yeah, I suppose every army has psychers available, except Tau. They specifically don't have psychers.
Tau don't. Dark Eldar didn't until they got a special dispensation.
Fair enough.
In the new FAC. So that's long. There's a bunch of other changes. It's mainly a very, very small change to the rule
that
set.
That was what I was feeling
Lots
when we
of tweaking.
Played. Yeah.
It feels like 6.5.
The basic flow
really
didn't
fair.
Change. Yeah. Yeah. That which was a huge relief as well, because I barely remember how to play from the last sort of season of games we were doing.
Yeah, it's basically taken the rough edges off all of the problems. Mm-hmm. It's created a few of its own, but it has moved a lot. And it does play quite well, I have to say.
It had a feel of something that had actually been thought through and tested a lot, which surprised me, really.
But I think the problem was the testing was 6th edition.
Yeah.
So, people who found problems in 6th.
It's that sort of Windows problem of every other release is the one to buy, Because 5th seemed reasonably solid back when we were playing it. 6th seemed a bit all over the place, and now this here.
The other change is that there's minor stuff all around, just minor rule changes. The biggest change is the change to Force Org, so how you pick your army.
Okay.
And you have the choice now of following your Force Org and getting a slight bonus, or just doing what the hell you want.
Yeah, which helped me a lot when we were playing. Because typically the orc force that I tend to tool around with has the... Oh, I can't remember what they're called now. Big guns?
Yeah, looters.
Looters, that's the ones, yeah. They're basically kind of artillery orcs with enormous shoulder-mounted gunnery. And previously they were classified as...
Elites. And they're still classified as elites. But there's a change now to the way scoring works, where every unit is scoring again.
That was it, because if you only troop units, which essentially boils down to the most basic infantry of every force, were capable of doing anything with objectives.
And the problem with that was if you shoot out somebody's troops, they couldn't do anything.
Then their elite units can just
and
wander around.
The objectives were all scored on the last turn.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is a bit nasty.
Yeah, that's all changed now.
Yeah. Mm. Again, we'll get to that in a second. But if you take a army which sticks to the force org now, your troops can automatically contest. So they could still take the thing, but they can contest it against somebody else who's on there.
Okay.
But if you've got an unbound army, then just everyone can take it, and then you get contesting as normal.
Mm, so which just adds a lot more flexibility to the basic nuts and bolts of gameplay.
There's a lot of complaints that it makes the game unbalanced because, you know, you might want, say, an army which is just made up of an awful lot of very overpowerful units.
Well, presumably the pointage costings still apply.
Oh, yeah, they
do, have
yeah.
less of them, and everyone rolls a six now and then.
You could have an army which is almost completely made up of, say, fighter bombers.
Yeah, yeah.
Which
it's going to be difficult to capture ground objectives, but very fun.
Yeah.
A lot of tearing around, blowing stuff up, daka daka. You're going to lose, but it'll be an enjoyable loss.
Well, actually, the Orc Codex is a brilliant example. The biggest problem you have with the Orcs Codex is you run out of battle wagons.
They will have to start walking everywhere.
Yeah, you just can't get enough battle wagons in to give enough troops movement with the points available. Because the problem with Orcs is you run out of slots before you run out of points.
Because everything's so cheap, yeah.
Yeah, what you want to do with Orcs is just lots and lots of large groups of boys, and this enables you to take more than the six you are normally allowed. So you could just go, you could have 1,000 boys quite happily at a certain points level.
Yeah, I mean, that raises other problems in terms of buying and painting miniatures.
Well, more importantly, that game would never end.
Well, it would eventually end on turn 9, ultimately,
yeah.
Anyway.
Well, I don't think you'd ever get to turn 9. You'd still be moving troops.
You wouldn't get out of turn 1,
and it's
yeah.
turn 7, but yeah. Or turn 8. Turn 8 is the one that never
track.
Happens.
Yeah.
There's these objectives. Now, we actually know something new about the objective since we played.
Oh, were we doing it wrong?
No, we were doing it sort of right, but there's an interesting fact which we'll get to. What these objectives are, there's six new mission types, which are alongside the old mission types, so they're still there.
Mm-hmm.
And these mission types involve cards or rolling on the table. Cards completely sold out, by the way.
Oh, right, yeah.
And so basically, well, each turn, and depending on the mission, we actually played the worst one, well, the best one for it, where the stuff was changing all the time.
Mm.
And you basically get a capture objective 2 card.
Yeah.
And if at the end of that, end of a turn where you're on objective 2 and have captured it, you get those points then and there.
Yeah, yeah, you basically trade in that card for some victory points and carry on.
Yeah, and this makes for such a flowing,
it
interesting
really
battle.
Yeah.
It is so much better than before, where you just fight around and then your last turn is move everyone onto the objective.
Everyone bundles onto the one objective because that's the turn you're going to score in, and the whole thing was leading up to it. I mean, it depends. There's pros and cons with it. I personally enjoyed it a lot because I'm a very reactive player. I don't tend to make long game planning when I play any kind of tactical strategy game. I tend to react to the situation on a turn-by-turn basis, and that worked really well for me with this because new objectives were coming up every turn, and I could sort of adapt and run the troops over to the next thing or do something different each turn and sort of respond to it all. I could see how players who are used to doing a six-turn long game will have trouble with this kind of dynamic, it's all changing, different things to do each turn type strategy. But then you don't throw the objectives away, well, they don't expire. You keep them and you can try and achieve them over the next couple of turns
yeah.
anyway. So there's an opportunity. Yeah, opportunity is there. You know, there's an opportunity to be an opportunist, or you can still carry on and hang on to the particular different sorts of objectives. And there's still a lot of static objectives there as well. Things like kill the enemy's leader.
Yeah, line breaker.
Kill all of the enemy, table them. That always still works.
That tends to be an auto win. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. If you can kill all of them, then and the rest of it doesn't matter if you weren't that good at responding to dynamically changing things.
Now, the thing that we've learnt about this is since the release, the Orc stuff has been announced, which is the first new codex for the game. And in fact, there's maybe Orc models all around waiting to be painted.
Oh, yeah.
And what we know about the tactical objectives is the Orcs have a different set of cards available.
Ah.
So mostly they're the same.
Yeah.
But there are six Orky ones in there.
Oh, that's nice. Being able to adapt victory conditions to suit your specific side.
Yeah, so basically you I don't
helps
know what they're going to
the be. Personalised, customised, yeah.
But there's going to be some very Orky flavour in there, which yeah. you may draw. So basically you've got a stack of cards, you're drawing them mm-hmm. in the way that it's meant to be played.
Yeah.
So you don't get repeats, which is the problem we had where we made a mistake on that.
Yeah, I think I came up with Capture Objective 4 three times.
Well, you're allowed
to. Since my looters were on it and dug in, it was a bunker,
there
they had
artillery.
There are
actually three Secure Objective 4s.
Okay.
They are repeated. But the first six.
But that's still valid, yeah.
Yeah.
Hold Objective 4 effectively, that yeah. becomes, yeah.
So it's interesting.
And you don't know ahead of time what's coming up next, so yeah.
And as long as each army has a flavourful set of their own,
yeah.
it's going to be really quite interesting and give you a certain amount of, I don't want to say the word flavour again, but flavour for your army.
Yeah, yeah. Because presumably you've picked a particular side for a reason. You know, you like that side and you want to see its distinctiveness over others. So anything that can help not only the units and the basic rules and special abilities that tailor to them, but also the objectives. That's great. I think that's brilliant.
Yeah. Another big change is vehicles.
Yeah.
Vehicles are a lot more survivable. I was playing a Dark Eldar force against you.
Yeah.
And they still go down.
Yeah, yeah.
But they weren't blowing up.
Oh, that was ridiculous. Was that sixth or fifth?
Yeah, sixth.
Well, there was a spate where we were playing fairly regular games, and it just seemed like any time a tank or a battle wagon or something came on the table, its lifespan could be measured in two or three turns, and when it blew up, it would invariably... We used the crater templates a lot, didn't we?
Yeah, we did, yes.
And it was just, you know, it was just like these things were made of explodium or something. They were the real sort of pinatas. Pinto, Ford Pinto, is it? Whatever. I don't know, whatever that car famous for exploding. Basically, taking vehicles was a huge liability that in the end I just started dispensing with.
Yeah, and
especially as an Orc player, you load them into the battle wagon at the start, and you get to one place in one turn using the full speed ahead, and then you just discard it because you knew it was just going to blow up.
Well, as with my Dark Elder, I rely on those skimmers staying alive.
Yeah, because the Orc vehicles are essentially just ungunned transports, just for getting the Orcs to where they need to be quickly, and then you discard them, and that's how I was using them. But yeah, yours have got quite considerable firepower on
them.
Yeah,
they got some good guns on
them. You need to keep them alive.
To keep them moving, and the advantage is even when they are destroyed now, it's a lot more likely that all the guys on them are going to survive and get out.
Yeah, there's nothing more frustrating than driving your tank, you know, your big huge chunky Land Raider armor personnel vehicle whatever forward one turn, have it take a nasty critical hit on the weapon table and hey, magazine explosion and everyone's dead and that's that. You just think there's not much point carrying on at this point, you know.
Yeah.
You've lost a significant part of your force in the first turn to a lucky one hit lance weapon or something, and then that's that. Gone, and it's just uphill all the way from there because the vehicles were just almost comically explosive in the previous rules.
Yeah, and now they're a lot better. And
isn't it now they're worth taking again? Yeah.
Yeah. The sixth really did feel unbalanced. It was mainly a shooty game, and vehicles were rubbish. So all you got was lots of long range shooting.
Yeah. From fifth to sixth, I saw my Orcs turn from quite a respectable close combat army to just dig in and use the snapfire rules now that they're here. Which basically, I think if you're being charged, you get to make one panicky shot with a gun. And the thing is, a panicky shot with a gun from an Orc is about one point on the dice less effective than a carefully aimed shot from an Orc that takes a whole turn. So
there's an awful lot of shots.
There are a lot of panicky shots, yeah. So I was just relying on him sort of impaling himself on my panicky snapfires. Because you hit on a 6+ instead of the normal Orc 5+, what difference does that make? Not a lot, and I would invariably take out quite a lot of yours as they came in.
Yeah.
So everything became a shooty army all of a sudden. So it'd be interesting to see if close combat works well now, because we didn't. The game we
the
played, we didn't see
the rules haven't really
any.
Changed, but
we were shooting a lot still.
Yeah, close combat can still work, and it's not quite as harsh in some ways. So.
I noticed the sweeping advance rules are still there. I'm not fond of that.
I think it needs to be, otherwise you can just tarp it any unit very easily.
Sweeping advance, basically, if you lose in melee combat, or if you basically lose a morale check, which can also can be triggered by losing a quarter of your troops in one turn, then if you fail your morale check, they all leg it. And if you're the people who made you leg it are directly behind you, they get to try and chase you, and if they catch you, they destroy the entire unit. No appeal, no nothing. But no saves.
I think it has to be for stuff like the orcs, who have a group of 30 boys who can just throw them into and tarp at you. Although then again, they can still do that because you're not going to be.
It just seems harsh that they're gone like that,
yeah,
because lack of any real control on your part. Suddenly the morale's broken, and
with,
now
with
they're
the orcs,
not my troops
it takes so
anymore.
Much to get down the morale on I a suppose group of 30 the, boys, yeah. So that even triggers.
Yeah,
so it's still a valid tactic, and maybe we should be playing with more assaulty orcs still.
Maybe.
Now, interesting thing about the new book is if we look at the appendix, which is that big, which is the last... 50-odd pages.
Oh, blimey. It's quite an appendix.
And the appendix actually is fantastically laid out with all of the special rules, easy to find, all of the tables you need and everything.
It seems like they've hired a new technical author or something since the previous versions. Someone new's in charge of actually laying out the book.
You only need that last 50 pages, really, to play.
Yeah.
And... Okay. You can find whatever you want. There's tables here. You've got pages here with all of the movements put together in one place.
What have we got in the way of photocopyable single sheet summaries? Is there anything like
quite
that?
Quite a few.
Yeah.
You,
no, you don't want quite a few. That's the wrong point.
No. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 6 pages worth. So 3 sheets, double sided.
It's the tables, isn't it? Mostly. It's the what do I need to roll to do this?
Yeah.
And also just a turn summary. What happens in what order? Do we do this? Now we do this. Now we do this. And here are the tables you need. And beyond that,
it's stuff like they never really bothered to specify this before. Like there's a table here which says that a rapid fire gets full number of shots. Snapshots only if they move. Basically, just laying it down on a table saying this is what happens.
Constant reminders of particular special
like
rules.
Like flat out cannot shoot.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because a lot of... there are some rules in there that apply universally to entire sides, entire armies, and you need to have them constantly reminded to you that all your troops will be able to do this and not your enemy's troops are different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is a fantastic book and I cannot sing its praises highly enough. They have finally decided to do what no one else would do, which was to make a book which is designed for the player.
It seems quite unequivocal, yeah. It's very difficult to get stuff wrong or get lost, and it's all laid out well, yeah.
So it's actually quite fantastic in that way. Now, the only question is, why have they done a new edition after 2 years?
How long do they normally do?
3, 4. It's a very quick edition.
Well,
and in fact, not all of the armies had been updated to 6.
The cynic in me says they need to have new product to sell. But how much do they make from the book compared to lots and lots of models?
Books are some of the sweetest money you can make selling anything on the planet.
Uh-huh.
Books have such a high markup.
Mm-hmm.
So they make a lot of money off these books.
Mm. And your game will need at least one copy of the book to be able to
and
play.
Then there's a copy of the cards.
Let alone all the models and stuff. So, yeah, I suppose the cynic in me is saying that Games Workshop need revenue streams.
Then again, there was also the problem that the game was feeling a little bit wrong before.
Well, yeah, I mean, the trusting, naive idiot in me says that maybe this is about addressing a lot of problems with 6th edition. I don't follow it particularly closely, but I guess 6th wasn't hugely well received and has caused a lot of complaints and grumbling in general, has it?
Oh, there's plenty of complaints and grumbling, but... Yeah.
I suppose there'll be new complaints with this one.
Yeah, actually, there's people have been complaining massively about it, saying this is overpowered, this is overpowered, this is overpowered.
So what are the main problems with this then? Is it largely game balance or just people not used to it yet?
What's the problems? The problems that people are identifying is you can generate a large number of... in the psychic phase now, there's stuff you can do to generate new creatures.
Okay.
And people are saying that's hugely overbalanced, but every single playtest people have done with that has proven it doesn't work.
Presumably these new creatures are fairly one-hit wonders.
Yeah, but you can double your points value if you do your army right.
Yeah.
Only it's just not reliable enough to depend on. There's also stuff, the unbound armies where you can do what you want. There's the potential there's some nasty builds.
I imagine a force made up entirely of looters camping waypoints is going to be hard
work. That's an interesting one, that. Cause
then I suppose the counter to that is some sort of jump pack marines or whatever.
Close assault them because the squad size isn't big enough, and also area weapons.
Yeah, the looter squads are very small compared to normal orc squads, which means their morale thing will kick in much earlier. So you just need to hack a few of them to bits.
I don't think that this earlier on that we can tell anything that's wrong.
I think this early it's not about this is overpowered, this is broken, or this needs buffing, and this is needs nerfing. This is at this stage, it's about learning the parameters of a new space. It's about essentially picking out particular scenarios, playing through them, and then working out, well, yeah, now what do I do to beat that?
Yeah.
How do I win from that? How do we change that with different sorts of troops?
Yeah, I think the internet
and
is
you're
definitely
need a lot of that, and yeah, share your tips on forums and so on.
The internet's definitely one to go for the whole, there's a problem here, oh my god, the game is broken.
That's the internet for you.
We've identified something which is slightly stronger than we'd like, therefore.
It just means your opponent needs to rethink his army list a bit.
Yeah, or maybe what you think is strong, it doesn't actually work that way because you've forgotten averages.
Particularly if the same trick works on you two or three times in a row playing these things, you really need to think around the problem.
Yeah.
Come up with something new, try something different. I suppose that will inevitably lead to more trips to Games Workshop to buy models, but
that's the way
That's always been what the hobby's been about, yeah.
Every time a new codex comes out, there's always trips to buy new ones.
I have to say, I hadn't noticed that the randomness element of this game has significantly diminished. It seems about as dice-reliant as it always has been.
It's always going to be dice-reliant.
And, yeah,
and you are playing one of the worst dice-reliant armies there is.
Orcs have it uphill against probability. More often than not, a thing they are trying to do will not work. But there are so many of them trying it that some of them will get through.
There are situations with one squad where you can be rolling over 100 dice in one action.
Yeah, but you need 5 pluses and then another 4 plus and so on, and it just sort of whittles down to eventually to like 5 or 6 decent hits, which is exactly what a squad of 10 Marines would get.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's all about balance.
And the averages, they seem unfair, but they are fair because they are averages and it all does work out in the end.
So the game we played, I had a, what was it? Was it 500 points?
Yeah, we played a couple of 500
really
point armies.
Really small pointed,
just,
short
just
game.
To get that feel of
just
the
to
new...
walk through the rules, really. I had orcs, I had, what, 2 squads of boys with shooters and stuff, and one squad of looters and a minor war boss attached to one.
Yeah,
and you had Dark Eldar.
I had Dark Eldar. I had a bunch of raiders with splinter racks on them.
So you had the 2 of those sail bargey hover skimmer things,
which had a bunch of warriors on, and that gives them twin linked on the weapons.
That was quite
also had the range reducing bonus on them, so that I could just hang out of your range and shoot.
Oh, that was the shimmer field thing, shadow cloak or whatever it is.
It's one or the other.
Yeah, something like that. Basically, your floaty barges are a bit wibbly wobbly, and I can't shoot them. I have to get nearer to see them.
I was
properly.
Just holding out of your weapons range, shooting you, and as you slowly drove me back along the board.
All my boys were on foot, and you had hover barges, which meant that kiting, I suppose, became the natural obvious solution to what you were trying to do there. You had a smaller thing there, Venom, was it?
Yeah, that had some troops on it.
And that was some heavy troops on there, was there?
Yeah,
they were more melee-based? I don't know, they had swords.
Yeah, they were a bit more melee-based, but they didn't do that.
We had a whole bunch of ruined buildings in the middle, a bunch of objectives, quite a lot of objectives. That seemed quite dense. There were objectives all over the place. I think we had about...
We had 6.
6 of them. We were on a fairly small table.
Yeah, we had 6 and we were on a smaller table.
We were playing
4 foot by 4 foot,
yeah. So there was objectives almost within touching range of each other. And then this new victory condition system coming through with the objectives changing each time. We didn't have any cards, but we were writing them down as they were being rolled through the book. I love the new concept of a D66. I hadn't seen that elsewhere. Which essentially is rolling two D6s and using one as a sort of 10s.
Yeah.
Which essentially is a range of 66 and missing all the... I don't know what that means statistically, it basically meant that you could get more than just 6 objectives coming up, which is quite good. And the objectives really just did seem to come down quite lucky for me. I happened to be near objectives when I got given the job to go and capture them, or I was already on some there.
And you'd put one objective inside a bunker, then decided to fill it with looters.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely turtling up there, which is not really a phrase you expect to hear used with orcs, but...
Those looters out was an impossible job.
Yeah, yeah. I'm surprised you didn't try blowing the building up.
I didn't have the firepower to do it. It would have taken too many turns.
Because you have your floaty sail barges have some sort of lance.
Yeah, they got a very good anti-vehicle weapon that would do it, but it only had 2 of them.
Oh, I see, yeah. But yeah, so I was really dug in on one, and that one just luckily seemed to... So I got quite lucky with the objectives, which put me quite far ahead on the victory points. But yeah, in general, just the shooting... Did I bring any of the sail barges down? I can't remember.
Yes, you shot sail barges.
Okay, got those down. That's good.
Yeah, and when you took them down, all they did was they crashed and the guys jumped out.
Yeah, yeah, it's nice not to lose the whole... Well, you know, as an enemy, it's not nice. But yeah, So, and we played for up to about 7 turns or something? Because it does that thing, was it turn 5, you start rolling to see if the game's over and the probability
you have
of it being...
Yeah, you have a turn 6 and a turn 7 maybe. And
yeah, and the probability of it being over gets greater each time you'd have to do that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I won.
You did?
Which was remarkable. I don't normally win this stuff. It sounds petty. I don't like to be thought of as the sort of person that only enjoys games I win, but I did enjoy it anyway. I think, you know, even if you'd have won, I think just the freshness of seeing these objectives changing and coming
there was
and
flow
quartering.
To the game, which doesn't usually exist.
It wasn't the objective of the game is to go to here and camp it for 6 turns, and, you know, you're sort of throwing yourselves at it and seeing who gets there first and all that sort of stuff. You get a lucky assault run roll or something, you get there slightly ahead, you get to dig in, and then the game goes all turgid from there. That's good. And it's just nice to be using the orcs again, I think. Just shuffling them around, wedge hands, trying to move them up to the next objective.
This Saturday the new orcs codex comes out.
Yeah.
So we'll have to play with that. Not that week, because we're both away at different things.
Yeah, yeah. Some events come out. But, interesting gaming.
Actually, I don't know if we'll have a show next week.
I think I would do it again, yeah. Would play more.
That's lucky.
Yeah.
Because you're going to.
Not really my choice, is it?
No.
Fair enough.
Well, we need to play with the new Orc Codex to see what they do.
Mm. Is there a Dark Elder one coming soon? Or have you had one
probably.
Recently?
No. Orcs and Dark Elder are still old 5th edition codexes.
Okay. But you have a number of alternative armies you can try.
I have all the alternative armies, yes. Mm.
It'll be interesting to see how some of them work. Standard Marine Force, maybe, see how
they
do under the new rules.
Yeah, I don't play an awful lot of Marines. I should probably try
them. They
are
quite boring, but it's nice to... I think I get the impression that the Space Marines, you know, the Human Imperium, is generally used as a sort of calibration stick for the other armies. So seeing how Space Marines do would be probably a useful
science
experiment.
I'm quite tempted to do a fully Terminator list against your Orcs and see how that goes.
Hmm.
Very resilient, but
we get your
2+
armor saves and stuff. But I roll, you know, I've seen you roll ones before quite a lot.
Yeah,
you did seem to be fighting against the dice a bit in the game we played.
Definitely fighting against
some,
the dice.
Some crap rolling going on there, and I seem to be getting a bit more lucky than is normal. But I'm sure that'll reverse the next time we play.
Oh, it's the nature of dice.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's the problem, isn't it? You roll a whole load of lucky dice, and how much of that can you then claim as a personal success and victory?
Well, you claim the success on the strategy and the tactics.
You claim the success on using what the dice roll well, I suppose.
Yeah.
If they all come up 6s, you've still got to do something with that. You've got to do something clever with that.
Yeah, it's all well and good if you roll complete 6s and
look
everything.
Look at that, I roll loads of 6s. I'm brilliant at this game.
If your entire army just shot one guy in that turn.
Wasted luck.
I believe the term is overkill.
Overkill. But yeah, good stuff. On the whole, I think I think if you're certainly if you've played before and are thinking of playing again, 7th is a good one.
Yeah, it's a nice one.
I don't know. There's a whole bunch of caveats for getting into the hobby in the first place. It is expensive.
It is very expensive. Do not enter this hobby unless
you need a lot of room as well. You need big tables. You need somewhere to put it all. You need to be reasonably good at painting. I mean, it's more a lifestyle than a hobby, than a casual board game.
Is.
I mean, you might be better off with Settlers of Catan or something if you're just looking for a after dinner party type pastime, but yeah.
I don't think there's ever been a dinner party where they played
Shall we retire to the wargaming room? No, shall bring the cigars. We've got the full battlefield laid out there on the billiard table. All there in dinner jackets.
Yeah.
So
yes, the starter isn't being replaced. The one that we reviewed a couple of years ago.
God, I've forgotten even what that was. That was Tyranids versus...
That was Chaos versus Dark Angels.
Okay, yeah.
And what they're doing there is they're just saying that the rules are out of date. Yeah. And I think they might be replacing the book.
But it was a box full of decent models.
Those
anyway.
Are very nice models.
Good place to start.
So it's still a good place to get in if you want to play Boring Marines.
So the rule book set, how much is all that?
Oh, it is something stupidly horrendous because it's Games Workshop. Let me just have a look.
Okay. I don't know if you need all three of them. Certainly,
you have to buy all three of them. It's
are they part of a set?
Yeah.
Ah, fair enough. I mean, certainly the Galaxy of War photo.
They come in a box.
Wow, look at that. Wow, there you go. Big solid card-bound box there.
Yeah, the...
So it is a set, yeah, fair enough.
The rule books. Oh, 200...
Rulebook set?
Quid, wow.
No, what the hell are you looking at there?
220 quid for a copy of all of the codexes.
Wow, you don't need all of them. You'll need the rules and the one for the army you collect. Well, you collect them all, yeah. I know you're a bit different.
I may have just been gesturing at the bookshelf there, which is
well, he's got them all. Yeah.
The main rule book.
Yes.
Is,
this here. This
now again, book. I just opened the site and it says £220 to start with. That's not the right.
That's
right.
The preferred thing they'd like you to buy. Oh,
£50.
£50,
which isn't too bad.
Well, yeah.
And it's the price of the computer game.
It's what you'd pay for three very glossy hardbound A4 coffee table
and
books.
And it's basically
fine,
the retail price of
my problem
a
with this
game.
Is that £50 is just the rules, and you're going to spend at least another £50 to get an army.
Well, you naive optimist.
Unless you start the Battalion quid. Box thing or something. I don't know.
£50.
Well,
yes, you have
it's
to.
It's a ridiculously expensive hobby, and on that basis, I don't think I could recommend it to anyone.
No, I would never recommend this game.
So it's a shame, really, because the game's all right.
Because you've then got to pay £30 for your codex.
Yeah.
And then
so that's the codex is essentially your army specific rules for the race you've chosen, and a list and all the stat blocks for all the different types of unit.
Yep.
So that's required as well. Yeah.
And then you
need the rule books, rule set box book. Is there a cheaper version of this without all the gloss?
Not yet.
Okay, so you're up to £80 just on books.
Yeah, you are. Another £5 for the cards.
Okay, yeah, 85. Okay, now find me a decent entry level army set then.
Okay,
of models and
let's start as Marines because it's all boring.
Marines, good introductory force.
Let's ignore the £500 one there. And
it's very difficult to talk about Games Workshop products with a straight face.
There's a Space Marine Strike Force for £140.
Surely we can start somewhere lower entry than that.
I'm not seeing anything.
My God, so you're basically talking £200 to get started on this.
I would say you are talking £200 to get in at the ground floor.
Yeah. Which sort of blows everything we've talked about for the last 15, 20 minutes out of the window, really, isn't it?
If you're going to afford it, you'll enjoy it. I won't.
It's one of those if you have to ask hobbies, isn't it?
I won't look at Sisters of Battle because they're the most expensive way to play this game. Okay,
if you've got that kind of money to spend, throw around, I think you might be better off just going into illegal underground homeless hunting blood sports or something.
There you go, Imperial Guard, £100 yes. for the basic battle box.
Who wants to be Imperial Guard?
They're brilliant.
They're just blokes with rifles
lots
who just die in their billions.
Big tanks.
They do get some big tanks, yeah. Yeah, so...
Yeah.
Oh, I see what they've done with the logo there. They've coloured in the OR and K from Workshop.
It may be an Orc release.
It's an Orc week.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I suppose if you've got that kind of money to throw around, and or if you're an existing player and you're upgrading the rules and stuff, then this rule book's, this £50 box set's quite good.
And the models still are fantastic.
I think if you don't play already, for the love of God, don't start. Take up heroin or something, it's much cheaper.
Meth, crystal meth,
crystal
brilliant.
Meth, yeah.
Or drink too much.
Yeah, abusive alcohol consumption, yeah.
Yeah, or dangerous extreme sports.
Yeah.
Throw yourself off a mountain.
That's free.
Yeah. Good. All of them are more healthy than playing footy.
And on that light note, so what did you learn this week?
I learned this week that it is really annoying the way that Buffy and Angel aren't interleaved properly on various video streaming sites.
I never
sites.
Had you down as OCD looking at this room.
Well, no, just trying to watch them in order.
Oh.
And also the fact that Netflix in the UK only has Buffy and not Angel means I'm onto Amazon Video Player, and that's even worse.
Well, this week I learned that Sandra Bullock is a terrible house guest. I watched Gravity yesterday. My God. Was it described as Sandra Bullock goes to space and destroys everything?
Yeah, she completely wiped out the space age.
Set mankind's space exploration back 1,000 years. Fantastic film, though. Very good. I highly
apart
recommend
from
it.
The end's really weird.
Well, yeah.
I think she died.
You reckon?
Yeah.
Bit of a cliffhanger.
Well, she does manage to figure out how to fly a Chinese spaceship. See, like that.
I'm sure learning Soyuz was close enough.
I shall pick a button randomly. Engine start.
That one's got to be it. Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah. Actually, no, the Soyuz capsule and the Chinese capsule are almost identical due to various licensing.
Very good film, though. Highly recommend it. Yes. So, do your spiel.
You can go along to howtomurdertime.com where you can leave us comments about this episode and see our previous episodes as well.
Mm.
Somewhere in the archives is the one where we reviewed 6th edition of 40K.
Yeah, there's a couple of 40K episodes of this show back in the archive.
And that was actually a playthrough of the 6th edition starter where we decided that the armies weren't balanced.
Yeah.
You can also go along to iTunes and leave us a review. You can catch me on Mondays on Moving On. This week is the 6th best Highlander film.
6th best Highlander film. I had no idea there were that many.
There are.
Wow.
Guess which one it is.
There's no justice, is there?
Now guess which one I'm reviewing out of those six.
Is it the one where they turn out to be aliens in a
dome
in space?
Yes, the second one.
The second one. That's the, widely regarded as, yeah, an atrocious
I had
adventure.
To watch the first one again to warm up. Yeah, and also you can catch me on Thursdays on The Brainstorm.
Okay, yeah, Brecky's back, so...
Brecky's
so
back, so that's
I'll
a lot of stress.
And have my Thursdays to myself again.
You can come on any time
no,
you want.
No, no, yeah. Fine.
Yeah, and also I did a guest on another thing, but I can't remember the link for that. So
is
this
some How to Make Podcasts or
yes.
Why We Podcast
yes,
or
the,
something?
The second episode of our Why We Podcast.
Because I'd be fascinated to know.
Go on to thepodcast.com and find the link to it there. It was actually on one of the other guys' podcasts.
Right.
Oh, that was a weird one. Yeah. Talking to people.
Did anyone know who you were?
No.
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 it's always awkward.
You're talking to people who just had to go off to E3 to go work on the bungee stand. Okay, fine.
I appear to be lost. Sorry.
Yeah. I really do feel like that boat which is following behind in Small Gods. Just got caught up in the Armada.
Yeah, not sure what I'm doing here, but I have a podcast.
Yeah.
Excellent. You've forgotten the rest of your spiel there, haven't
you? Yeah, yeah. Anyway, Destiny Podcast is hosting it this week, I think, and yeah, it's fantastic. I guess that's about it for spiel because I can't remember where I was.
Excellent. We'll see you next time.
Goodbye.